So how did you get the call to do this? I mean, how did this come about? I mean, you know, were you a fan of the first film? I mean, obviously, you're kind of a genre fan, having the Citadel in a way. But how did this come about?
Well, I didn't really get the call to do it, more the tweet to do it. I got this gig through Twitter because I, you know, I follow Scott Derrickson on Twitter anyway. Back in January 2014, he tweeted, "Oh my God, just saw this movie Citadel on Netflix. Everyone needs to check it out." You know, and so I just replied to that tweet and said, "Thanks." So then he started following me and just asked me like a dozen questions about Citadel. And, you know, about working with kids, about, you know, what kind of schedule I was working on. And then said, you know, look, you'd be the perfect director for Sinister 2. You know, so that's how it came along.
So you follow me on Twitter, there should be something coming out.
Exactly. Exactly, yeah, 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 totally. Totally.
My question was about the casting. Like, did you specifically look for Mike Drew and Tony Blair for that sort of a mandate? Did you do that? I mean, did you punch them together, and what was that?
Yeah, well, the script always spoke about identical twins, you know, and, you know, so I knew that was going to be a hard thing to find, because after coming off of Citadel, you know, it's very apparent to me that it takes a long time to find one good kid actor, but to find two that are identical, that was going to be a challenge. And so, you know, our backup plan was, if we can't find twins, we'll just make them brothers, you know. I'm hearing myself again. No problem. We found these guys almost within the first week of looking, and they were twins. They're actually part of a triplet. I've asked casting to have a look in places that you wouldn't normally look, you know, in the sense that, you know, on Citadel I found most of my kids at a local martial arts school, you know. And the reason I did that is because I'm always, you know, when you see a kid that has a manager, you know what I mean, or you know, the parents are like overly theatrical, and it's like, you know, that you get this kind of overly theatrical performance from the kids, and they never feel like real kids, you know. And so I wanted them to feel like they had a gritty and a raw kind of personality, and felt like kids. So my first film, I found most of my kids in a local martial arts school, and you get what most 10-year-olds lack, which is a sense of discipline and focus, and the sport, the martial art brought that. But you also get kids that feel like real kids. And so on this movie, we found these guys, they play hockey, you know. And so they had all of those qualities, plus they're brothers. So they have a rapport with each other that you just wouldn't get if they were two kids that I just met for the first time. So that worked really well, yeah.
In terms of the location and all of that, what are some of the specifics that you wanted in the film? Because for me, it was very authentic, that Illinois countryside.
Uh-huh.
You know, it felt like, thank God it's not in L.A.
Uh-huh.
You know,
yeah,
it's out there in that open space. The sheriff and all of that thing was just rural.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was refreshing.
Yeah, totally. No, thank you. Now, the script initially spoke about Colorado, and I think that was because Scott was basing it on this red church that was, you know, it was a rectory beside the church where he grew up, and so spoke about this rural location. And when we were thinking about where we would shoot the movie, there was a great tax incentive in Illinois. So we were like, well, let's just change the location to Illinois, you know, and let's bring in cornfields, and let's bring in, you know, some of that abandoned farm kind of and small town USA kind of feel to it, you know. So we went out there, and we were based out of Chicago, but we shot in a place called Kankakee in St. Dan, and we found this house where we shot. I mean, we did very little to how that house looks, but the trouble was in finding this church that was beside the house. And we found some great locations that had a real church, but then the church would ask to read the script. Whenever they read the script, they were like, you know, it's you can't shoot here. You know, you've got people crucified to the floor and rats eating them from the inside out. No thanks. So we found this house that had a red barn attached to it, and then Bill Bowes and his production design team added the steeple that you see there, and so yeah, I mean, it was part and parcel of the script was this rural location that felt like it was in the middle of nowhere, so you couldn't scream for help.
There was a book written on, the title of the book was The Dark Side of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple of torture things in the film that actually came out of that book. Now, I don't know if you read the book, but the thing with the rats,
uh-huh.
the Christians did that.
Yeah.
In the 15th century.
Uh-huh.
If you didn't convert to Christianity, then, you know, you were subject to that.
Right.
And if the Arabs came in, then you had to be a Muslim. So both of those religions were forced on people.
Right.
And I was just wondering if you guys used the history of that for those things with the rats.
Well, I think that was in the script when I first got it. So that's probably more a question for Scott or Cargill. But I was aware that, you know, that was a medieval torture device.
Right.
And I remember thinking, you know, the one thing, I think we've seen it a couple of times in movies, this idea of a rat being, you know, I think in Fast and the Furious they have it. But I remember thinking to myself, I've never seen the end product. I've never seen the rat coming out, you know. And sort of said, you know, is there a way for us to make this work where we see the rat coming out? So we ended up shooting a real rat with this kind of prosthetic piece of stomach. And, you know, he had some sort of like food coloring on him. And they put a piece of food out at the other side of the stomach, and the far side of the stomach was just hollowed out. He was just sitting there, and he just kind of poked through the silicone to come out and eat the food. And the reaction from everyone on set was like, ah, you know? And then when we finally put the shot together, you know, we comped in, composited in that stomach into our actress on the ground, added in the blood and the music and stuff, and the reaction is the opposite now.
Well, how do those children react to a movie like this? I mean, is it something when they're done shooting, they have to get counseling to get it out of their heads? Or?
The funny thing is, you know, making a horror film is, there's a lot of laughing on set, you know, because every day for the kids is Halloween. You know, and they know Nick behind the Bagul mask. He's their friend. You know, I have to ask them to stop kidding around because they're, you know, sort of, because he can't see, so they're like tipping him on the back and all this kind of stuff. And you know, or they're, you know, they're pulling out their prosthetic makeup, or, you know, so it's just this kind of circus that you have to sort of like calm down and shoot the scene. So there's a great sense of levity on set the whole time, and it's all make believe. But they're probably not going to see the finished movie, you know. Like we have a PG cut of the movie that we're going to show to them, you know. But legally they're not allowed to see this R-rated movie, so they never sort of see it.
When you were directing the kids, like the part where the film was showing to them, were they watching that film?
No, no. On the first movie, I think they shot the kill films like months before so that they could project it for real. When Ethan Hawke was watching the movies. But on this movie, because each of the kill films have some sort of visual effects component, you know, whether that's snow, like we have CGI snow, or the rats or the alligators, we couldn't do that because that's months of work, you know, in post. So there was nothing on that screen except white, you know, and then when the kill films were finished with all the effects added, we composited that into the screen. So there was nothing on set.
Okay. One last question.
Do you have any tips for new directors that want to make it big and are just kind of in the embryonic stages?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I would just keep making movies. I mean, there's the ability today with there's a film that I just saw, Tangerine, which is shot on an iPhone, you know, and it's in theaters, you know, and you know, we almost all have access to smartphones that have capability today of shooting 1080p, which is something I never had, you know, when I was younger. So you know, my advice to people would be just keep making movies, and you can upload them onto YouTube. you can get them out there. And I think, you know, the harsh reality of this game is that, you know, the best ideas survive, you know, and if something really captures people's imagination, it gets around, it gets spread around. So that would be my advice, would be to just keep making movies, you know, telling stories and doing cool stuff.
Great, thanks guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cool.